Pushkin.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. Before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision and her tiny living room, far from Nashville's music row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
Mary Clayton is a legendary backup singer and one of the few who managed to consistently steal the spotlight.
Southern man, you better keep your head. Don't forget what your good book said.
Mary grew up singing in her father's Baptist church in New Orleans before becoming a part of Ray Charles' backing group, the Raylettes, in 1966. From there, her powerhouse vocals appeared on a number of classic songs from artists like Lynyrd Skynyrd, Neil Young, and Carole King. Mary's journey from a renowned backup singer to a solo artist was documented in the Oscar-winning documentary 20 Feet from Stardom in 2013. Almost exactly 1 year after the film was released, Mary was involved in a near-fatal car accident in Los Angeles. That accident resulted in her losing both of her legs. After years of intensive physical therapy, Mary was back in the studio working with her longtime producer Lou Adler on brand new material. Her new album, Beautiful Scars, is a testament to her enduring faith, featuring songs by famed songwriter Diane Warren and also Coldplay's Chris Martin. On today's episode, Mary Clayton talks to Bruce Headlam about the lasting impression hearing Mahalia Jackson and Aretha Franklin sing in church left on her as a little girl. She also recalls how the Rolling Stones convinced her to get out of bed in the middle of the night and sing on their 1969 classic, Gimme Shelter. And how Chris Martin was the first person to get Mary back in the studio after her tragic car accident.
This is Broken Record, liner notes for the digital age. I'm Justin Richmond.
Here's Bruce Headlam and Mary Clayton.
So this new album, it's got some great old songs. It's got a lot of gospel. When did the idea for the album come to you?
Well, it actually, in the beginning, didn't come to me. It came to my Uncle Lou. When I was in the hospital after my accident, I would speak to Lou like every day, you know, maybe two or three times a day. And because I was in the hospital for almost 5 months, I would speak to Lou and he kept saying to me, "So Mary, when you get out of there, you need to be singing." I said, "Yeah, sure, you know." And he would keep revisiting the same thing. And of course, I'd say, I'll think about all of that. So when I finally got out of the hospital, he said to me, "Well, what do you think? You think you want to record again?" I said, "Well, Lou, I really don't know. I've got to get through what I'm going through before I even think about recording again." He said, but you're going to be okay. Don't worry. The main thing, he said, I want you to do is get well. And once you get well, we'll revisit it again. So about 8 months into my recovery, I got a call from my then manager. And he says, you know, I got a great call from Chris Martin. I said, Chris Martin, what are they calling for? He said, well, they wanted to call to see how you were doing and how's Mary and how's she feeling? How's the recovery going and whatever. He said, well, we're going to be in town in about 2 weeks. And we would love it if we can get Mary to come by the studio. So I spoke to my manager and I said, you know what? That'd be a great time for me to get out and just kind of hang in the studio and hang with the guys, you know? So I went to the studio and we just kind of hung out and talked and listened to them. This is when they were recording Kaleidoscope. But now in the meantime, Lewis called me. He said, I hear that you're visiting Chris Martin. I said, yeah, I'm here with the guys at the old A&M studios. So of course, after the Kaleidoscope sessions, he kept saying to me, Mary, you need to be recording. So we called my great producer friend, Terry Young. And Terry said, you know what? I've got three great songs. I'm coming over. I said, okay. And he came over with Oh, What a Friend. That was the first song. And then he came back with God's Love. Then he came back again with another song. And we just went over the songs and Lou heard it and we loved it. So he says, you know what? I'm going to make a call and we're going to get going to the studio. Where would you like to do this? I said, well, I'd love to do it I'd like to go home and do it, which is A&M Recording Studio to me, which is the Henson Studio. And we went into Henson and it was on.
That's amazing. Now, had you known Coldplay before you sang on that album?
I knew Chris. I didn't know the rest of the guys.
So what was it like first time after your accident to be in there singing? What did it feel like?
Well, it felt like any other recording session, really, or any other, you know, just hanging out with some friends. And they wanted my presence and my spirit to be there. So as we were kind of hanging out, Chris says, you know what, let's go out to the piano. So here he comes, you know, he's wheeling me out to the piano. And we got to the piano. He said, Mary, can you sing this little part? I said, well, what little part? I wasn't supposed to sing. He said, oh, you can sing this little part. So he says, go in the booth. Let's go in the booth and put that on. But that's how that started. Then I put one part on, a background part on. Then I put another background part on. Then they called me two other times to do the same thing again. And we just kind of kicked it and had a great time and did a little recording. But I didn't have a problem going in the studio. That was like drinking water.
What songs had you done in that studio?
Well, I did the Mary Clayton album there in that very studio, which I didn't even know where I was going. I had no idea that the studio, that the session with Coldplay was even going to be at Henson A&M. I just, you know, they were driving and they wouldn't tell me anything. So when I got there and they took me into the studio, I said, oh my God, this is my studio. You know, this is where I did. He said, Mary, what did you do here? I said, I did the Mary Clayton help here. And we also did Tapestry here.
The Mary Clayton album was your second album, right? Was Gimme Shelter your first?
Yes.
So that had that incredible version of Southern Man on it.
Yes.
Do you remember recording that?
Of course. I remember every session I ever did.
I want to hear about that one because it's such a great song, the way you do it. It was fabulous.
Well, thank you. Lou had suggested that song to my husband, who also worked for Lou on the A&M lot. And we got home one evening and he said, you know what, we need to listen to this song. Lou asked, you know, to check it out to see if you'd like it and if you want to record it. So I listened to it and I listened to it again. I listened to it a couple of times. I said, you know what, if we just funk this up a little bit, I think this would be a great song. The message was incredible at that time. So then I had my great friend Billy Preston played on that. I had, I think, Joe Sample. I had a couple of the Crusaders. I had David T. Walker. I had all the great musicians on it. So we got through with and did it the way we wanted to do it. Then we loved it.
Had you known Billy Preston from Ray Charles then when you sang with him?
Well, this is another story. Billy and I were childhood friends. We knew each other from 9 years old.
Oh, you're kidding.
No. Billy went to a church called Victory Baptist Church, he and his mom and family. And I went to a church on the other side of town called Mount Moriah Baptist Church. So these two Black churches would always visit each other. They would like hold revivals where a minister would come in and preach for a whole week, you know, and hold these great revivals. And they had these great choirs to sing. And I went to Billy's church and saw this little guy, 9 years old, playing this Hammond organ. And I said, well, who is that? And my mom said, that's Billy. That's Robbie's son, Billy, little Billy. So they got us together and we became great friends as kids. And whatever Billy would do, I would do. Wherever Billy would play, I would play. So we kind of mimicked each other, and wherever record company he would go to, I would go to. Whatever he would do, he would always recommend me to do vocals. So that's how our whole situation worked until, you know, he left this earth.
Did you sing with him in church way back when?
Oh, God, yes. Yes, absolutely. When we were kids, we always sung. Billy would play and I would sing.
And you, did you sing solo in your church?
Of course. I was the baby. I was the baby girl from, I had to be four or five years old.
And your dad was the pastor.
Yes, he was.
But New Orleans had such great secular music as well as church music.
Yes.
When you got older, did you go out and start seeing like New Orleans greats, or did your dad not like that?
What happened in my situation was, at my dad's church, it was every maybe 2 weeks, there would be great singers that were in town doing gospel in New Orleans. And they would all come to my dad's church to sing, you know. My dad's great friend was Mahalia Jackson. And Mahalia loved, they were really great. They kind of came up together. And she would always, when she was in town, she'd always come. And I, some kind of way, would find where she was and go and sit and nestled myself right up under her. She would be on one side, and Linda Hopkins, she would always sit with Linda Hopkins. Linda Hopkins was my dad's friend also. She was a great singer. So when Mahalia was there, whatever she was singing, I would mimic her the next Sunday. And different Sundays, Sam Cooke may walk in and, you know, he may be in town and he would come and sing at dad's church. And with the Soul Stirrers, he was the Soul Stirrers at that time. So all the great gospel singers, Aretha's dad, Reverend Franklin would come and he would, you know, have a word or whatever. And Aretha would sing, you know, so everybody kind of knew each other, you know. And I was about like 7 or 8 years old.
Did you ever sing with Aretha or with Mahalia?
Well, I didn't sing with Mahalia, but I did sing with Aretha. If anyone knows me more than 30 years, my family doesn't know me as Mary Clayton. All my family, close friends, call me baby sister. So my sister named me that before I was born. My mom asked her, what does she want for Christmas? And she said, I want a baby sister. So Christmas Day I came. So all my life, I've always been known to my family, close inner circle friends, as baby sister. So Aretha would call me and say, let me speak to Big Daddy. I said, you speak to Big Daddy. Well, that's what they would call my husband. Let me speak to Big. And Curtis would get on the phone and he'd work out whatever they wanted to work out. And my husband would come to me and say, the Queen wants you to come to New York. I said, the Queen, come to New York? Yes, yeah, she's doing Avery Fisher Hall, or she's doing whatever. And she wants you to come. She wants to see you and she wants you to come and sing with her. So they would pack me up and send me to New York or wherever Aretha was. And I would sing with her group. You know, I would sing whatever she wanted me to do. I was there for her. And this went on for years.
I have to ask you, do you remember Sam Cooke and the Soul Stirrers singing?
Absolutely.
Do you remember what they sang?
I think it was Jesus Gave Me Water and It Was Not From the Well.
Oh, Jesus gave me water. Jesus gave me water. Jesus gave me water. I want to let his praises swell.
Yeah, I remember that.
Wow. What I don't understand is how you went from, you're singing in your dad's church, you're in New Orleans, and then you moved to L.A. I think, was it pretty young you moved to L.A.?
I moved to L.A. when I was 8, almost 9 years old.
Oh, I see. When did you start singing on records then? When did you start doing backup and that kind of thing?
Well, I started doing backup at 14. I think I was in junior high school, getting ready to go to high school. And I went to a session with someone, I don't remember who, and they heard me sing. They said, you know what? You need to join the group. Why don't you come and just sing with us? So they picked me up. I went to the session and I sung. Just so happened this particular session was for Bobby Darin.
Was that the song, Who Can I Count On?
No, it wasn't that particular song. This is where he heard me sing and asked me, who are you? What is your name? He said, you're singing really loud. And I would back up and we'd start again. And I would start singing loud again, you know, and I'd back up some more. And then he said, well, who is that voice? So he finally brought me in the booth, brought me behind the board and said, sing your part. So I'd sing my part. He says, wow, you sure can sing. And we had another session. He said, you know what? I would certainly like to speak to your parents because I'd like to record you. You know, he got with my mom and they talked about what was necessary. And what was necessary was that I take a nap. They would pick me up from school. I'd take a nap and they had to correct my homework. And then I could go downstairs and catch Capitol Records and sing with Shorty Rogers and the big band.
Was that scary for you?
Well, no. You know, when you come up singing in the church, I came up with singing with some great singers. So I wasn't intimidated at all. I never have been intimidated to sing with anybody at any time, anywhere, and with anybody. It really didn't bother me at all. And I remember that session because it was sort of late in the evening, almost like about 6:30 or 7 in the evening. And I kept saying, when are they going to do my song? What are we going to do our song? So Mr. Darin would tell me, he says, well, the next song is going to be our song. So they put me in a booth. My section was on one side and he was in front of me on the other side in the microphone. So I would start singing and he told me what he wanted me to sing and I just sung it. And he was like, where does that come from? It was funny to me. He said, who taught you how to sing like that? You know, I said, I don't know. I just sing like that in church all the time. He says, well, you should be singing all the time. So when we did the listen back, I was able to hear myself and I said to myself, my God, that really sounds good.
did you want to be a singer at that point, or was it just something you did?
No, I didn't particularly want to be a singer. I just wanted to sing. You know, I didn't know that it really meant being a singer. I just love singing.
And what was Bobby Darin like? Was he a nice guy in the studio? Was he helpful?
He was wonderful. He was just a joy. What a joy. A very kind, very loving man. I mean, it was a big session. This was a huge session. And this was with Shorty Rogers' big band, you know.
Yeah.
So to hear that orchestra, and well, you heard the song. You heard the orchestration.
Yeah, the song is great.
And it was killer. I said, oh my God, I get to sing with all of this. And I would always say, wow, that sounds like Ray Charles's band, because he was like the only guy that we would get a chance to really see maybe once a year was Ray Charles.
Growing up, you'd only see Ray Charles was the only guy you would see.
Yeah.
Why was that?
Well, my father was a minister. You couldn't be hanging out and lollygagging somewhere you had no business being at that age, at 14, 15 years old. That was not going to happen. Not in my house.
Did he make an exception for Ray Charles?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the first time you saw him?
Yes, Billy and I. Here we go again. Billy and I and my sister went to see him. And my dad allowed that, and my music professor, Eddie Kendricks. So we go and see Ray, and Billy and I find our way at the really front of the stage. They were standing. You could stand and watch the show. And we were standing at the front of the stage. And I was talking to Billy, and he was talking to me. And he looked at me, and he said, we can do this. I said, I can sing like those girls. He said, I can play like those guys. And we looked at each other and said, you know, one day we may just get a chance to sing with Ray Charles. I said, boy, that show would be great. And, you know, about 5 or 6 years later, you know, he heard Billy and just lost his mind when he heard Billy. He loved Billy. Ray absolutely adored Billy. So Billy called me one day and said, hey, what are you doing? I said, I'm folding towels. He says, you need to get up here. You need to get up here and sing for Ray. I said, Ray, who? He says, Ray Charles, put on something cute and come up here to the RPM building. Well, of course I did what he said. And I went to the RPM building, had my my sister to take me to the RPM building and sung for Ray and left with a contract. And he wanted to go out on tour with him. So he spoke to my mom, you know, my mom and dad, and they said, you know, we have to see about that. And then my mother found out that Billy was going, and his mother found out that I was, you know, thinking about going. And the parents talked, and, you know, they figured out, you know, this would be a good great experience for them. We have to have somebody to look out for them. So the lookout person for us was Curtis Amy, who was the musical director.
He's a pretty good lookout guy.
Yeah, he was, you know, I met him. We fell deeply in love with each other and married in 1970 and was married for 32 years.
So when did you start touring with Ray Charles then? What year was that?
In 1966.
What was he like as a band leader, Ray Charles?
Oh, boy. He was a taskmaster. You had to be on your game. If you were not on your game, you could not be on tour with him. He was a wonderful man and a great teacher. Everything I learned, I knew how to sing harmony. But I mean, I really knew how to sing harmony when I parted and left Ray Charles. He had that very close, because he had four singers, four girls. That's hard harmony to sing if you don't have a good ear, you know. But he taught us, he would rehearse with us every day because he wanted a certain sound and you had to sing it. And, you know, you had to sing it the way he taught you to sing it.
So did he do a lot of the arranging himself, or did he have arrangements for you?
No, he had arrangements for us. He knew what he wanted his girls to sound like.
Right.
He knew exactly. He already had his big arrangements, but he wanted his vocals to sound like. You know, so that's why he meticulously took time. I mean, we would rehearse every day. We'd get into a city and he'd rent out the ballroom and we'd sit in this big ballroom with this big baby grand, and we'd sit around the piano and he'd work out parts with us every day. It didn't matter if you knew the part or not. You had to sing it again. Because he had to know that you knew it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can you remember, what were the hard songs to sing with him, of his hits?
For me, it was Together Again. If you saw 20 Feet from Stardom, I talked about that song. I mean, I could not hear the second part. I just could not hear it. Bobby Womack was in the band at that time. And everybody was trying to help me with these notes. He said, baby, I'm going to play this part. I'm going to play the first note. And when you hear that note on my guitar, that's the part you come in on. My husband, Curtis, said, okay, and I'm going to play this particular note on the saxophone. Everybody was trying to help me. I could not hear the note. So we were in Carnegie Hall. And do you know, when it came time to sing that song, I got ready to sing. The song was Together Again. And my part was, Together Again, the great skies are gone. That was the second part. I could not hear it. And I did not sing the correct note. And do you know that he took his finger and banged out my part?
Ooh.
He took his finger and banged out my part. Well, I tell you one thing, no one had to tell me about that part again. I could sing that part in my sleep because I wasn't going to be made to look like a fool.
Did you sing on recordings with him as well?
Yeah, I did Let's Go Get Stoned with him, which was his very first hit.
Let's go get stoned.
Yeah.
Let's go get stoned.
And I also worked on, Eleanor Rigby for the movie In the Heat of the Night. And, I worked on several things with him.
Did you decide to leave to do more backup in your own work then?
Well, I wanted a career for myself. My husband and I had discussed it. I was engaged to Curtis by then. And we had discussed it. And I discussed it with my mom. And, you know, I just felt like I could be a great artist by myself.
Did Ray Charles understand that?
Well, no, he didn't want us to leave. He didn't want me to leave at all. And he sure didn't want his conductor to leave.
Yeah.
Because, like, we were his favorite. He loved me and Billy. And he loved Curtis. So he said he did not. Oh, that did not make him feel too good at all. Later years, we talked about it. He would always say, Sister Mary, you just left me. I said, oh my God, he's still horning on Sister Mary, you just left me. Because that's what he would call me, was Sister Mary. You just left me. I said, well, you know, I wanted a career. I couldn't have a career out on the road with you.
We'll be back with more from Mary Clayton after a break.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
We're back with Mary Clayton and Bruce Hedlum.
So when did you meet Lou Adler in all of this?
Okay, so I met Lou. Lou was doing an album called Dylan's Gospel, all Bob Dylan songs, but he wanted to do them in a gospel flair. So he wanted to call all the great singers in LA to do these particular sessions, which consisted of the Honeycombs. He wanted all the great background singers. So, you know, he put out the call and Gene Page called me, the great arranger. He says, Mary, you know, I'm doing this record with the producer Lou Adler, and I have a couple of songs that may be great for you. Come to my office and let's kind of go over them. If you feel like you like them, we'd like for you to sing them on this record. So I went to Gene's and I loved the songs, you know, and they were right up my alley because they were, you know, they had a gospel flair to them and I could sing that in my sleep. So the session was in about 2 weeks. Went to the studio, and everybody had a different lead on different songs. So I met Lou at the studio. And then we did, I think the first song was Quinn the Eskimo and Times Are Changing. Well, by times of the were changing, Lou pulled me in the hallway and said, you know what, I'd like to talk to you after all this is over. So we met with Lou at his office, my husband and I, and he offered me a deal.
Wow.
And I was really ready for a deal. He gave me a great deal. And we decided to sign with Lou. That was 1969.
Now, you had a lot of friends who were background singers.
Yeah.
Was it really competitive among you to get jobs? Was it a tough business to be in?
No, I didn't think it was tough. It wasn't tough for me. I just always thought that if it was for you to have or for you to be on, you'd be on it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if it wasn't, then you wouldn't. I mean, there were so many different singers and we all just loved each other. We really, really cared for each other. So whenever somebody could help each other, somebody would call me and say, well, you know what? They're doing a session for Motown and they need a top or they need a second soprano. You sing everything, Mary. So can you just come to the studio? I said, sure. And I'd go. And there would be other singers. There would be Clyde King. There'd be Vanetta Fields. There'd be Shirley Matthews. There'd be Patrice and Brenda Holloway. There would be Gloria Jones. These ladies were all great singers and writers. So I didn't detect any competitiveness in that. we were all just grateful to be doing this wonderful work.
And then before you did your first album, you did the Gimme Shelter session.
Yes.
Which is very famous. They called you in the middle of the night.
Yes.
Now, do you still understand why, when you were called in the middle of the night, you were very pregnant?
Yeah.
You delivered just such an incredible performance.
Well, I think every time I go to a record date or do anything, I bring everybody that has ever been good to me, everybody that has said anything nice to me, everybody that has prayed for me or really been for me, meaning all of my ancestors. I bring all my ancestors with me wherever I go and whatever I do, especially when I'm singing or doing my craft. And I brought all of them with me that night because they had to help me, because that was a long, it wasn't a long night, but it was a very strange feeling that night in the air. You know, it was a beautiful feeling, but it was a little strange, you know, getting up at almost 11 o'clock at night to go and do a session. And Jack Nietzsche calling that late. Jack has never called me that late to come to the studio. So, as you know, of course, you probably heard my husband. I'm talking to Jack, and my husband takes the phone. He says, "Hey, man, what's going on?" He says, "Well, we'd love this group to call the Rolling." And before he could get Stones out, my husband grabs the phone. He said, "Well, what's going on?" He says, "Well, they would love to have a lady sing on this part." And Curtis, when Jack talked, he would always talk like, "Curtis, I think it would be something great for Mary later on down the line." I think he was always really great and always in my corner, Jack Nietzsche. So he says, "Well, baby, I really think that you should maybe." He said, "You know how you are. It won't take you long to do this." So I opened the front door, and the car is sitting down at the end of the stairwell down there waiting for me. And the driver's standing on the, you know, kind of leaning on the car. So I go to the studio, and Mick and Keith had been out in the back. So they're coming through the back door. They were out doing whatever that they did. And they said, "Well, are you Mary?" I said, "Yes." He says, "Well, we want you to do this part." And of course, that's the Old Children, "Just a Shout Away, Just a Shout Away." So I did that. And then it got to the part of Rape Murder. Well, first of all, Old Children, "Just a Shout Away" was very, very high. It was very, very high. So I sung it. And of course, I had everything and everybody around me that I brought with me, and they helped me to get through it. But when they got to Rape Murder, I was like, "Rape Murder?" I turned to Keith and I said, "Honey, I'm here by myself. I know you don't want me to say nobody, no Rape Murder." They said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, tell me, what does this mean regarding the song?" So when they gave me the gist of the song, I said, "Okay." So we started to sing Rape Murder. And boy, it even got higher when I started singing Rape Murder. And I mean, being pregnant like that, I don't know if I really should have been singing that high, but something just took me over, you know, just took over my whole being almost. And at that time, it was a lot of racism going on. It was the war in Vietnam. It was Dr. King and, you know, the Black movement going on. It was just a lot of, it was just very weird out there in the street. Policemen, the brutality. And I think I kind of took that spirit on that night. And it was like I was just crying out to the heavens to please give me shelter. Give us shelter from all this stuff that's going on here. Because it touched me very deeply. So by the time I got finished with that, it was like I left myself. And then I came back to myself. And by the time I came back to myself, they said, "Well, they were hooting and hollering in the booth, just hollering and screaming in the booth." And I'm looking at them and I said, "Okay, do you want me to do one for say, oh, just do one more. Can you do one more? Can you keep the crack? Oh, can you keep the crack that's in your voice?" And it was so late, my voice cracked. That's why my voice cracked.
Right.
You know, in that song, and my voice cracked, and it apparently that was good. And they said, "Can you give us one more? Please keep the crack. Don't get rid of the crack." I said, "Well, I'll try, but that's just what my voice did that time of night." So I did it again. And before they could come out, I was waving goodbye and I was on my way home. And that was I did about three takes of that and I was done.
Were you surprised when it became a big hit?
Yeah. It was a humongous hit. Yes, I was.
What was it like when you did it for your album? Because it's very different.
Oh, I was having fun. As I said, I brought everybody with me, you know, and I had all of my great musicians in there with me, and I had some of my family there, and we just had a great time. It was just a great time because it was my first album, period. My first record, and as Mary Clayton. And it was wonderful. I just had really a great time. What a great groove. Louis Shelton on guitar. It was just wonderful.
You do a version of Bridge Over Troubled Water.
Yes.
Which, you know, people know the original and they know Aretha Franklin's version, but this version it's very different.
Yes.
It's really wonderful. Can you talk a bit about that?
When we did that song, you know, that was just how I was feeling. I was feeling like a bridge over troubled water. You know, you have to have a certain feeling to sing those type of songs. And there's still a lot of turmoil going on in the world. And I felt like we were definitely a bridge that was over some troubled water. You know, and I just brought all of my spiritual stuff into the session with me that day. And everybody just seemed to love it. But it was just my spirit. That's what that was dwelling in my spirit that day. I think that we had just done the Monterey Pop Festival, and I had the whole Love Unlimited band with me at that festival that day. So I tried to recreate that when I went into the studio, and it just turned out so great. We were very happy with that.
And then you did your next album with Southern Man and Steamroller and You did a Carole King song. You had sung on Tapestry, is that right?
Yeah, I did a duet with Carole on Tapestry called Way Over Yonder.
Oh, I didn't realize that was you.
Yeah, that's me.
And did you do other background on that album as well?
Yeah, I did all the vocal background on Tapestry. Myself and Julia Waters did.
Oh, incredible. Mm-hmm. What was Carole King like to work with?
Like my sister. We're very close. We're very, very close. We've always been close. We're still close. She was a joy. She loved my husband, and he did Brother to Brother with her, and he worked on Tapestry also with her, you know. But we were like family, you know. We were the same record label, and we would always do everything together, you know. We had kids, you know, and we never talk about anything but the children. We didn't talk about music at all. You know, sometimes we talk about music, but our main conversation was always about the kids. You know, the kids were always on the lot there at A&M and kind of hanging out. You say, oh, come and get Kevin. Yeah, Mary Clayton's son is in the office causing havoc. Carole's kids would be there. So we were like a big family. And she was like, I came one night. I was taking a girlfriend out to dinner and I didn't have the credit card. So I stopped by to get the credit card from my husband. And Carole was waving me in. Come here. I said, well, what's going on? She says, come, I want you to sing this little part. And it was Way Over Yonder. So I sung that part and I went on out to dinner with my girlfriend.
That's amazing.
Is that funny? When we went to do the listen back, she said, this is what you did. Listen to yourself.
Is the sun shining golden? Shining right down.
I said, oh, Carole, that's great. She said, oh, Lou says, oh, Mary, it was wonderful. And it turned out really, really great. So we were happy about that.
Why were you able to do things so quickly? Did you read music by this point?
Of course I did. But I didn't have to read music to do Way Over Yonder. I mean, it was like a church feel. Way Over Yonder is a place where I know that I could find shelter from a hunger and cold. And the sweet taste and good life is so easily found Way Over Yonder. That's where I'm bound. It was like going to choir rehearsal. She says, sing these lyrics and sing them how you feel it. So that's what I did.
Wow. Did you make your dinner reservations?
Of course I did.
You made it on time and you sang a hit on the way there?
I think Lou called the restaurant, said they're going to be about maybe 20, 25 minutes later. And then when we got there, everything was set up and ready.
Oh, nice. So, you know, so many people know you from 20 Feet from Stardom.
Yeah.
And you said something in that film I think about a lot, which is you said, every time I get ready to do something, something would knock me to my knees.
Yeah.
And you were talking about solo stuff and other things you would do. you know, you had this accident. It's very traumatic. You lost your husband years before that.
Mm-hmm.
Did your faith in your ability to get up and do this, did it ever wane?
No, never wavered. My faith has never wavered from a child. I knew what I knew. I knew who I was. I've always known who I was. But more than that, I've always known whose I was. I always knew, and I was always taught that I was special, that I was a gift, and that I was descendants of royalty. I was a queen. And I was great. I was always taught that, you know, that we were always taught that we were wonderful just the way we were. And we were always God's property. So never waver. Whatever God does or whatever God allows in my life, you take it. It's how you deal with it. You know, it's like I was speaking to a great lady in my life one day at a huge party. And I got her ear and I was complaining about something. I think it was a deal that was about to go down. It was taking too long. And, oh, I don't know if I want to do it. And da, 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 da. I said, why does it take so long to get stuff done? So she looked at me and stared at me for a long time. And she says, baby, she said, that's called L-I-F-E. She said, that's life. She says, but it's about what you do in life. How are you going to handle a situation in life? It's not the situation, it's how you handle it that would help you get through it. And I always remember that. That was that lady was my godmom, Della Reese. You know, when I had my accident, she says, now, she went back to the same thing. She says, well, however you deal with this is how you're going to come out of it. She said, okay. She said, I want you to gather yourself. She said, how are you going to deal with this? I said, I'm going to deal with it with love and with dignity. She said, you know who you are. I said, I know exactly who I am, Mom. And she said, well, you're going to get through this and you're going to get through it in victory. So don't waver on what you've known all your life. So no, my faith has never wavered. And I've never asked, you know how some people, when they go through things, they always, oh God, why? And I don't think of myself, you know, when this happened, I spoke to my brother and, you know, I tried to cry the blues to my brother. I said, well, I don't know, you know, why this particular thing, you know, had to happen. He says, well, there's a purpose in everything. You know, he says, so again, he says, you know who you are. And again, you know whose you are because this is what we were taught. So you'll get through it. But it's going to be a challenge. He says, but such is life. You know, life is a challenge. Nobody gets out of this without scars.
We'll be back with Mary Clayton after this quick break.
Every week at Broken Record, we meet with legends of the industry to uncover the meaning behind the music, the strategy and history that separate the good from the truly great. That's what Mark Chaikin does, but for the U.S. stock market. Mark is a creative legend in his own right. He worked on Wall Street for 50 years, invented three new indices for the NASDAQ, and has predicted some of the biggest market shifts of the past decade, including the recent mania in AI stocks. Now Mark says we're seeing a similar shakeup in the financial markets. He's calling this a new dawn for the U.S. stock market and predicts dozens of specific stocks will soar in the next 90 days. He put everything you need to know in a new presentation specifically designed for people off Wall Street. You can watch Mark's presentation for free at newstocktrend.com right now. Again, the link to watch is newstocktrend.com. That's newstocktrend.com. The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
We're back with the rest of Bruce Sedlem's interview with Mary Clayton. But first, here's some of the title track of her brand new album, Beautiful Scars.
I've been on the battlefield of life. I've been through it. But I just had to go through that to get to this. Been kicked down, but fate brought me back, and I'm still standing here now. These are beautiful scars that I have on my heart. This is beautiful proof that I've made it this far. Every hurt I've endured, every cut, every bruise, wear it proud like a badge, wear it like a tattoo. These are beautiful.
Your album is named Beautiful Scars for a great song. Was that song written for you by Diane Warren?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Had you known her before?
Oh, God, yes. Everybody knows Diane Warren, but I think there was a movie score that I did that she was involved in. I think that a background session, also my granddaughter, worked with a little group that she was working with from school. And they would go to her studio, and she came to me one day. She said, Grandma, she says, do you know Diane Warren, don't you? I said, yes. She said, we were at her studio. I said, what? I said, did she know you were my granddaughter? She said, no, Grandma, I didn't go up to her and say anything. She says, but she is really wonderful. I said, she's only one of the greatest writers in the entire world. But when we were doing the album, we were sitting in the studio behind the board, and Lou and Terry and I were just talking. You know, we were doing a listen back, and we were just talking. So Lou looked at me. He said, you know what? He said, I think I'll give a call to Diane. And I looked at him, and I said, Diane who? Diane Warren? He says, yes, let's call Diane. And when he called Diane, he told her what he was about to do. She says, what? In the studio with Mary Clayton, she's doing an album? He says, yes. She says, well, I'll have something to you in 2 weeks. And this woman wrote this Beautiful Scars. And when Terry came in with it, we all just had to leave out of the studio because everybody was just in tears when I heard this song, because it was so much of what I had been through. I have definitely been on the battlefield of life, and I have been through it. But I had to go through that to get to where I am today, you know? And those words, they were so what I have been through in my life as an artist. But these are still beautiful scars.
What was it like for you to sing it the first time?
Oh, man, it was a tearjerker. You know, I had to really get myself together. I had to really get, because every time I started to sing it, I started to cry. I would tear up, and you could hear it in my throat. I'm sure you could probably hear it in a certain part of the song when I say everybody's got scars, you know, and that's true. Everybody has some type of scar or another. But during the time I was recording it, the first time I recorded it, Lou says, you know what? He said, I think you need to go home and really, 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 really horn in on the song, and we'll come back in two days. Okay, Mary? I said, okay, Uncle Lou, that's cool. So I came home and played it over and 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 over until I got it in my spirit. Once I got it in my spirit, I was ready to go. So we got to the studio, and the first take, they loved it. And then here I go again. And then we did another one for safety. And then we did one more, and that was it for Beautiful Scars, because they wanted to capture the performance of it.
Yeah.
And that's what we did.
I want to ask you just about one more song. It's full of great gospel songs by your producer, but you redo a song I think you did on your first album, which is Leon Russell's A Song for You.
Oh, yes. Oh, Bruce. My. You know, that song, you know, like couples have songs that they really like and they go back and remember things that they were doing at that time in their lives. And when that song come on, you can just look at each other and say, oh, boy, I remember that song. Well, that song applied to my husband and I. And that was my Aunt Curtis's song, because he would always say, I always feel, Mary, that you're singing that song for me. I said, well, I am singing that song for you. And when I recorded that song, we just fell in love with it. And of course, we loved Leon. And when I recorded it for this album, see, I didn't know that Lou and Terry were going to pull Curtis's solo from the Mary Clayton album and put it on this particular record. So one day, we're kind of hanging out, and he calls me and say, Mary, I'm going to send a song for you, but I want Kevin to be sitting with you when you listen to it. So Kevin is my son. So I called Kevin. I said, you know, Uncle Lou wants you to be here when I listen to Song for You. We had no idea what was going on. So we have these great speakers in the house. So we're sitting and we're listening. So Kevin took his finger and he was pointing to the music. And I said, why is he pointing? He said, Mom, that's Dad. That's Dad. I said, oh, my God. Lou pulled that solo from that album. And we both just, you know, it just brought us to tears. It brought us to tears. It was just so wonderful. That's why this song is so special to me.
Well, it's an amazing version.
Thank you.
It's a terrific album. What's next for you? Are you waiting to see about when you can perform again in public?
Absolutely. I think we're getting ready to do a couple of videos. And it's a lot of things brewing, a lot of things coming up that they tell me. We're looking forward to doing great things with this record. I want people to really be blessed by hearing this and be able to really touch somebody or help somebody in some kind of way with this music. You know, it's very important to me that, you know, I was telling Lou, I said, Lou, if I don't get a dime, it doesn't matter. I just want people to be touched, because this record has healed my soul and my spirit. It's really made me feel like me again. So I just wanted to bless people and people to be really touched and delivered from whatever they're going through, and to be lifted up in this record.
You've already touched one. You're going to touch a lot more. It's just wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
And I couldn't be more thrilled you're singing again and doing it so well. So thank you.
Thank you so much. God bless you guys.
Thanks to Mary Clayton for sharing so many wonderful stories with Bruce. To hear a playlist of our favorite Mary Clayton songs and classic tracks that feature her on background vocals, head to BrokenRecordPodcast.com. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel at YouTube.com/BrokenRecordPodcast, where you can find extended cuts of new and old episodes. You can follow us on Twitter at Broken Record. Broken Record is produced with help from Leah Rose, Jason Gambrell, Martin Gonzalez, Eric Sandler, and Jennifer Sanchez. With engineering help from Nick Chafee, our executive producer is Mia LaBelle. Broken Record is a production of Pushkin Industries. And if you like the show, please remember to share, rate, and review us on your podcast app. Our theme music's by Kenny Beats. I'm Justin Richmond. Peace.
Every week at Broken Record, we meet with legends of the industry to uncover the meaning behind the music, the strategy and history that separate the good from the truly great. That's what Mark Chaikin does, but for the U.S. stock market. Mark is a creative legend in his own right. He worked on Wall Street for 50 years, invented 3 new indices for the NASDAQ, and has predicted some of the biggest market shifts of the past decade, including the recent mania in AI stocks. Now Mark says we're seeing a similar shakeup in the financial markets. He's calling this a new dawn for the U.S. stock market, and predicts dozens of specific stocks will soar in the next 90 days. He put everything you need to know in a new presentation specifically designed for people off Wall Street. You can watch Mark's presentation for free at newstocktrend.com right now. Again, the link to watch is newstocktrend.com. That's newstocktrend.com. StockTrend.com. Musora is your access to online music lessons for guitar, piano, drums, and singing. This is your chance to reignite some old musical passions or pick up an instrument for the first time. Connect with more than 100 of the world's best teachers and musicians. You'll get 7 days totally free to try it out. And then it's just $30 a month, less than a single private lesson. I mean, why do we do Broken Record? Not just because we love hearing from great musicians. We do it because we think that there is something beautiful about the appreciation of music. Don't you think we need more of that in our lives these days? That's the mission of Musora, to inspire, educate, and connect musicians. Enjoy unlimited personal support, weekly live streams, student lesson plans. It's like having a personal music teacher, only much, much better. Just go to musora.com, M-U-S-O-R-A.com, to start a new musical journey today.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.